Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through.
And thank you once again for coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find us on Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. And thank you for coming to the show. And if you like what you hear on tonight and the topics you see in the show, please consider following the show, which is easy. Just go to the Blog Talk Radio show here and go to the homepage of the Bard's Logic Political Talk here on Blog Talk Radio and just go under the show's icon and you'll see a little follow button. Just click the button and you will receive email updates on when the show will air and the topics that we will be discussing. And also these shows are archived, so you can download them or share the link for others to listen to the archives and share them as well. And also you can listen to them on your smartphone or your iPod or of course computers, and some can even be you can even download it onto CDs that can be listened to at your leisure in your automobile or what have you. Now tonight we'll have a special guest on, Dugan King, and we'll be discussing the United We Stand Festival. Now Mr. King authored a fair tax plan and a pamphlet, Tax-Free, A New American Money System, in 2012. He was the Arkansas 2nd District Leader for the Ron Paul campaign, electing Ron Paul supporters to all 6 delegate and alternate positions in the 2nd District. The United We Stand Festival will be the kickoff event for igniting a grassroots movement to reform the electoral process throughout the United States once and for all. And the United We Stand Festival is the beginning of the solution to the political status quo. And we ask, how can we have an honest government without honest elections? And Bard's Logic Political Talk is the grassroots We the People show. And I do have Mr. King on the line, so I will open up his mic. Thank you very much, Mr. King, for coming on to the show. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Robert. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, great. So, you know, on Facebook we were chatting, you mentioned something on there that I think you wanted to share with the audience to start off, and that was with one of your plans, independent plan, I believe you called it, independent nomination plan.
It's I call it the independent nomination plan, and it's what I would call an alternative parallel election process where you put independent candidates that don't feel comfortable in a party. I believe that's probably why we don't have too many people vote, because usually the only choice they think that they had is a Republican or Democrat. But the biggest block of voters are your independents. And Democrats and Republicans at election time have to they try to get that swing vote. They try to appeal to those independents. Who could go left or right, depending on the candidate. And so our elections become a liar's contest, and the lesser of two evils are usually the ones that win. And then as soon as the election is over, they go back to their corners and continue the same policies that are bankrupting the nation. So I've come up with a plan to where independent people can actually run in an election, and it's designed to keep out the big money, keep out the big media, and keep out the big parties, because those are the most corrupting influences on our elections. And if we can, that can be accomplished, then we'll have honest elections, and then maybe we'll have honest government.
Right, and with the big government and the not the big government, the big media and the big money, how would the folks, you know, the grassroots compete. And we've seen, you know, how things went, especially in this last election in 2012. The grassroots, you know, at least in the Republican Party, you know, really going up against the establishment, and unfortunately suffered defeats on that. So, in what ways can the grassroots, you know, come about to be able to defeat big money and big media?
Well, the strategy that I've been proposing is basically what I call a bypass strategy. The big money, Wall Street, the big media owned by Wall Street, the two-party system, clearly to me owned by Wall Street, it's like they have a lock. They've got their little duopoly, and they've got a lock on our election process. And so, like I said before, we only get to choose the lesser of two evils. They decide the two that we choose. So we need to bust that open. And the other thing is I just spent the past year as a member of the Republican Party, the Pulaski County Republican Committee here in Little Rock. That was the committee that Dr. Paul and Doug Wade asked us to, you know, they asked us not to worry so much about the primaries, but to focus on becoming delegates and having numerical superiority in the county committees. And that's exactly what we did in Pulaski County. We had a 75% majority after the deadline for becoming committee members was over. And so they didn't realize that they had all of these libertarian Republicans mixed in with, I guess, neoconservative Republicans. And they didn't realize that we had the 75% majority until the second district elections when we swept all the votes. And so then after that, there was a new strategy. And they, long story, they booted the libertarian Republicans out of power in the most in-your-face, blatant, corrupt way that you could imagine.
Right. And with all the other topics going around in politics now, you know, of course, you have Benghazi, which is, you know, still a hot topic. And, you, of course, the gun control laws is another. And, of course, a whole, you know, plethora of others as well. Why is it important now? Because a lot of folks, you know, are thinking, well, you know, we just got done with the election. We want to kind of take a break from it, get away from it. And why would people now, even this short after an election, pay attention to something that has to do with, you know, with elections that aren't until next year?
Well, I don't think there's really much motive for people to get involved in politics when the election is over. And so that's why in planning this United We Stand Festival in Little Rock on June the 22nd, we've decided people will come out if you can combine having a good time, invite, you know, musicians who are nationally known, speakers who are nationally known, and have entertainment and inspiration all in one event. And so things like that is how you can kind of keep people involved. But right now, since we're not having elections, we're more in a education mode. People are starting to awaken to the reality of our world, and people aren't fully awake, but I believe this this is a snowball that is starting to take effect. I think the snowball is big enough to where it can't be stopped, and given time, as we educate people, as we wake them up, as Free and Equal gets out there, as we establish independent nominating processes, all the liberty, there's hundreds of different little liberty groups that are eating away at the tyranny. And I think, and it's also based on the fact that we now have a free marketplace of ideas called the Internet, where we can organize and share and educate. And I think that's the big game changer is the Internet. So with all this, I'm anxious to see how things unfold over the next couple of years, Robert.
But it's interesting that we do start, even when people would consider it an, and this is my opinion, in an off season, because if folks wait until the next, you know, election cycle, election season comes up before they really start getting active, really starting, you know, doing things, you know, for you know, elections, by that time it's too late. The both the, you know, the establishment and the elites have already gotten their game ground or ground game, and then their organization's already put out there to just swallow everyone up. And that is the big media. That is the big money, and you know, that does that. And then, of course, once again, you know, we just repeat ourselves, you know, where, you know, it's a lesser of two evils. And you also, you know, you only have from the two major parties to pick from, in essence, because by that time, you know, the people haven't woken, I don't want to say woken up as much, but haven't been putting as much attention to it. You know, you have to start early, or else if you wait until election time, then it'll be, in my opinion, it'll be too late.
I agree with that, and that's why we're trying to keep, you know, the motivation going. We recently, right after the election, we had a big In the Fed rally in Little Rock that I was a part of, and that's where I got to meet Christina Tobin, who flew in from California, representing an Equal Foundation. And we had a really big, successful event here in Little Rock, and I got to sit down later on with Christina and some other leaders in Little Rock, and we kind of concocted this idea that we really need to break this stranglehold of the two-party system. And of course, Christina's been working on that for a while. She held the big free and equal debates that were seen by 20 million people worldwide with the third-party candidates getting to debate, and
well,
I think a lot of
that on the
people
show here.
Fascinated by that.
No, that's okay. No, we covered that here on the show and talked about it. And, you know, we had a couple of we only had one of the candidates from the debate on the show, and that was Virgil Goode of the Constitution Party. And also we had other folks like Tom Hoefling on. He was running for the America's Party. Now for him, he did not make it to the debates. But, you know, he's also part of it as well, you know, part of the alternative parties, the Liberty parties as well. So, you know, we had him on, and there was a point I was going to make earlier about it's important to do things now. We brought that up briefly. We could talk more about it later. But it's also for these type of shows, you know, Bard's Logic, the show tonight, for folks to, and I want to, you know, ask them, you know, share the link. Share the, you know, the podcast, you know, download it, share it to your friends, get it out there, because you're just going to have to multiply it, you know what I mean? You know, like,
yeah.
Give it to five people, and they give it to five people, you know, really need it to spread it out, and it has to start early. So it's very important for, you know, the folks who do listen and to share what they hear with other folks, and then talk to them and have them share it as well. You know, I mean, that's the only way it's going to be able to get out. Of course, you know, there are things such as the Free and Equal, you know, concert there with the United We Stand Festival, and, you know, and that's very important in getting information out to folks for that. So even if folks cannot go there personally, they can at least, you know, talk to people about it so they can pay attention and get some information and maybe find some other folks they know who'll be able to go. It's about networking.
Right, and the Free and Equal event here in Little Rock, the United We Stand Festival, we're probably going to fill up Verizon Arena in Little Rock. It holds somewhere around 15,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
The object is to draw them in with top name entertainment, and then in between, educate them a little bit about things that they would never hear on like the mainstream media.
Yeah, you're breaking up there for a minute.
Okay.
No, as I said, and you also wouldn't be able to, and a lot of those things, of course, the so-called alternative conservative media as well.
Mm-hmm. And, so this free and equal thing is hopefully we'll bring a lot of people out. We'll educate them. We'll get them involved in the liberty movement in one way or another. And we have, you know, speakers like Jesse Ventura has committed. Ralph Nader, it will be, we'll visit by live stream on social media. We've got other speakers like Ben Swan, people that are rising names in the liberty movement, young people. And, Then we've got major bands. As a matter of fact, Christina is announcing the big name band that is coming tonight on another. You know, I tried to get that information, but apparently today they signed a big name band, and I haven't heard who it is yet, and I'm waiting to hear that. And I wish I would have heard.
I've seen the post. Yeah. We're looking forward to that.
Yeah. And so by getting people out, doing something good and having a good time, we're out to open the elections. We believe in free and equal elections. We believe there should be more voices, more choices in every election. And we're trying to break that Wall Street two-party duopolistic lock that they have, their dialectic control system that kind of, you know, when all we have in every seat of government is Democrats and Republicans, you know, I believe that's what the problem is, partisan gridlock. That's what is making it where, you know, we're going bankrupt and nothing's being done. So, and the other problem is we can't really expect our elected officials to do anything anymore. So one of the things we're doing is these grassroots events. We don't, you know, by bypassing the bypassing strategy, for example, creating alternative currencies on a local level, that's a bypass strategy. Creating an alternative election process, that's a bypass strategy. And another bypass strategy we're working on is creating county militias, volunteer militias headed up by elected sheriffs, elected constables. These are three of the major things that we're doing in Arkansas to create a bypass strategy and to kind of immunize us against you know, this growing tyrannical bent in our government.
Well, and actually just last week on the show we had some folks on talking about well-regulated militias. And, of course, people can listen to that on the archives. You know, but, you know, we did, you know, if, when you get a chance, you know, definitely check it out. And also there's some, you know, some other social media pages that are coming up that we'll be announcing later and sharing with the folks there. But one of the things you talked about was, and let's break that down a little bit, maybe elaborate on them one by one, that you talked about. And, of course, as I said last week, we covered the militias. But you're talking about the alternative currency. That's something, at least for me, I mean, I've heard of it a little bit, but not in great detail. So let's talk about that and link that up with the tonight's show about the no rigging of elections.
Okay. Well, alternative currencies are popping up all over the country. One of the most successful currencies is the Berkshire currency that's circulating in Berkshire County, Massachusetts. And it's not a currency that's issued by private bankers. It's not like the Federal Reserve. It's not a currency that's issued by any government. Excuse me. These currencies are issued by merchants associations. And the key to making any currency work is the willingness of your merchants to accept that currency. They're willing to put up their goods and their services, you know, real wealth, in exchange for their own local currency. And so that's what makes it work. I mean, a lot of people think, well, you got to have a gold standard or it's got to have some kind of value built in. Well, the value is when you have an association of merchants who are willing to put their goods and services up to redeem the currency. So that's how Berkshires works. That's how we've got a plan in Arkansas called the Arbuck concept that I'm the author of. And we're trying to put these things to work. There's other currencies, like, for example, in Baltimore, they had the B note. Works pretty much like Berkshires. They have them all over Europe. They're popping up, and they're legal. It's kind of like, for example, imagine a coupon that is accepted by several merchants. You know, they accept the same coupon. That's basically what an alternative currency is. And what it
does
is... Yeah, it brings local producers and local consumers together and tends to create this gradually growing, self-containing local economy that stabilizes values and immunizes the local economy. A local economy with their own medium of exchange stabilized it kind of immunizes them against the booms and busts that the Federal Reserve creates by, you know, when they churn the money supply. The money ebbs in and flows out of our communities, creating those booms and busts and the uncertainty, the unemployment, the rapid inflation, things that are, they call it the business cycle, and that it's unpredictable. Well, I'm calling them on that. I say that those New York bankers up there jacking the lending lever and creating these booms and busts because they can invest in shorts and puts. And so the merchants in each community, they're standing there with their hands tied behind their back at the mercy of these bankers, these central bankers. And so that's what, to me, that's the biggest problem in America. Until we have an honest money system that's based on credit rather than this phony debt, you know, money should not be issued as a debt. And that's how Federal Reserve notes are issued. Honest money is issued as a credit, and if people would go back in time and maybe look up Ben Franklin's Pennsylvania script system, that's the kind of money that we should have. It was the whole history of Ben Franklin's Pennsylvania script system. That's what made colonial America wealthy and independent, and that whole history seems to have been swept under the rug, and people don't know about it. So that's what my tax-free pamphlet, I have an 8-page colorful pamphlet called Tax-Free, A New American Money System, and explains how a script system works. With a script system, you have no unemployment because script is created to put people to work. The work creates wealth. The wealth should accumulate in the local marketplace. And so the people who worked for the script can go into the marketplace and get their fair share of the goods and services that they need. You don't have to have... You know, they don't have to redeem it just with gold or silver. You can't eat gold or silver. You can redeem it with the entire wealth of the community, whatever you choose. And so that's how a script system works. And what it does when you put people to work by creating script, the work creates the wealth, and then the wealth is divided by the script, and that creates that completes the economic system without having to go in debt and tax everybody. And so these new kind of ideas have been swept under the rug, and that's what right now what's important is before these next elections get started, we need to have voters who are educated in these areas, who will probably hear of it for the first time because, like Dr. Ron Paul says, we live in an empire of lies. And I'm seeing for the first time, I'm an older guy, I'm seeing for the first time where people are waking up in droves.
Well, that's good, too, and you mentioned the word script, and this is something that's new to me, I must admit. There's one show that I actually make sure that I watch it when it's on. I record it, and then I watch it while I eat dinner. It's that new show called Defiance, and it's a great sci-fi show. It's on the Sci-Fi Channel, mm-hmm. But actually that's what their currency is called. It's called script. some coffee went down the wrong pipe. So that's what they call their currency. So, I'm sure you've heard. Hold on a second. Oh, I'm so sorry. Let me take another sip. Maybe I'll wash it down. But, and you've heard the phrase, you know, life imitating art. So that would be kind of an interesting twist on things. And finally, maybe something that's coming out of, TV shows, or it could actually be something that ends up being good. But, what you talk about, what you hear all the time about, the possibility of crashes, and we talk about big money and the banks. And if you look at the elections, especially, and this last election would be the perfect example, that you look at the people who both backed Romney and both backed Obama, as a lot of those big companies were the same people. I mean, they don't care who get elected because they get the money to, influence any of the politicians the way, regardless of party.
Well, right. Yeah, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York just happens to be the source, the original source of the world's credit. It operates as the world's currency reserve. It's private bankers who... make loans. We can't audit them. We caught them on some outrageous loans being made to private banks and their friends in Europe. These loans dilute the value of American dollar. And so this Federal Reserve deal, they've got this monopoly on money. They can create it out of thin air. When you have that power, you can create corporations out of thin air. And thus they've created the Fortune 500 corporations and the military industrial complex. And so we've got these gigantic monstrosities, these huge multinational corporations that dominate our world today, that have grown up around us during the past century since the creation of the Federal Reserve. And so how do you deal with a money monopoly when you can't get Congress to do anything about it because they don't want to bite the hand that feeds them? So you have
right.
a grassroots strategies. You got to figure out how to bypass them. And I believe the way to really decentralize the Fed is through creating alternative currencies. And that way, for example, the Arbuck is designed to be a backup parallel currency, convertible into dollars, but in the event of, let's say, the dollar collapses because of hyperinflation, which is, to me, seems highly likely, and to many economists, it seems highly likely. If that were to happen, like it did in Germany back in the 1920s, right after World War I, millions of Germans starved. They had chaos. They had starvation. They had riots. They had, and this enabled someone like Adolf Hitler to come to power. We don't need that kind of hyperinflation. But if it happens, the dollar could probably be wiped out in one day. And that's one of the things I fear. And so what do we need? How do we counter that? We need to have a backup. We need to have a secondary bridge to cross, and that's what alternative currencies can provide. I believe that the Federal Reserve, I believe it's been designed to crash. I believe the dollar is planned that it will go down. And so I believe we need to hurry up and get alternative currencies in place so that we do have that backup, that fail-safe that I think is crucial to prevent starvation and chaos and rioting and those kind of things. We need to have some kind of backup system. I believe if we can get enough alternative local currencies in place, that will do it.
Well, you know, and I believe it's time to, you know, to look into, and one of the things we tout all the time here, you know, on Bard's Logic is to do your own research. Don't always rely on the mainstream media or even the alternative, and what I mean by alternative is the so-called conservative medias to give you this kind of information. It's much better when folks take the time out and do the research themselves, you know, such as, you know, right now, some of the things you've just brought up today
right.
or tonight.
Exactly,
you know,
Rob. I tell people, yeah. don't take my word for it. Do your own research. And for those out there that may want to learn a little bit about alternative currencies, I've created a page on Facebook. It's called The Arbuck, A-R-B-U-C-K, The Arbuck on Facebook. I put all kinds of posts in there about other alternative currencies, where they're operating, how they work, why are they legal, and also some historical information about monetary science. And there's just lots of videos and things on there. So anyone out there that really would like to get their heads in a little bit of monetary science and a little bit of monetary history, the Arbuck page is the place to go.
Yeah, and send me a link to that as well, and I'll check it out. And it's
right.
a good chance to find it. The link will find its way out on the Bard's Logic, or its way into the Bard's Logic Little Talk website. So yeah, definitely send me the link there. But yeah, I mean, we have to, as I said, you know, we have to do something different. I mean, you know, there's a quote that my brother used to always say all the time, and I fully behind it is, says, if you always do what you've always done, you're always going to have what you already got. Now it might sound trite, you know, to say that, but if it's true, it's kind of like, you know, an elaboration on, you know, insanity. You know, keep doing the same thing and then expect to get different results. Well, we've been doing the same thing both with the monetary system and for the electoral system for years. And it's not getting any better. It's getting worse, especially when you have the two parties. Now, granted, right now, you know, there are some good folks in both parties, but, you know, right, you know, but and there's definitely some, and I'm a conservative, and there's definitely some conservatives in the Republican Party, but I don't know how much, at least on the national level, influence they have to make some changes where that party just doesn't become, you know, Democrat Party light, you know, especially with the candidates in the past two elections that the establishment put up for their coronation, I mean nomination. So that wasn't an accident. I did that on purpose. You know, so, it, you know, right now, unfortunately, it is the R and the D's, you know, nationally. I believe it's going to take a grassroots from the bottom up. You know, it's going to have to be the, you know, local elections will be affected first. And then, of course, you know, you move up the ranks that way. But also, that's one way. And then also, yeah, definitely take a look at these alternate currencies. It sounds interesting. You know, it definitely sounds like localism, you know, which, you know, I know some of, but not, you know, extensively, obviously, as you do.
Well, for example, the way the Berkshire work is a consumer is out to get a discount. Let's say you can buy, for example, you get 10 Arbucks for $9. And so every time you go to spend an Arbucks, you're getting 10% discount on everything you buy from the local merchants who agree to accept it. Now, these local merchants are producing local goods and services. They're putting local people to work. Why should you be buying catfish from Vietnam when Bubba, who's over here in an unemployment line, is good at catching catfish, and we've got a river full of them right here flowing through Little Rock? Why are we buying catfish from Vietnam? That's what's wrong with our economy. We're sending money overseas as fast as they can print it. And when the people overseas decide, hey, they're printing too many of these things, let's get rid of them, that's when it's all going to come back. It's probably going to swamp us like a tsunami. I'm looking for a tsunami wave of hyperinflation. And so, you know, the dollars just become worthless. And so here if we've got people that, you know, when you buy local, you're going green. You're creating a green, self-sustaining economy. You don't have to eat GMOs in your food. You don't, you know, these kind of things is what local currencies solve. And they also solve the boom and bust cycle created by the central banks. When you draw a boundary around your currency, it doesn't ebb and flow out that boundary because it's not accepted outside the boundary. So that keeps the money at home. And the, for example, the dollars that are replaced by putting our bucks in circulation, those are vaulted up, and that keeps that money locked in place and keeps it at home. And so that's one of the benefits. There's several benefits of alternative currencies, and there's also various ways to tweak alternative currencies to get desired effects. Unfortunately, we've got the money monopoly getting the desired effects that they want, you know, that are not beneficial to the public. And so we need to make changes, and the big change is getting rid of their phony debt money and replacing it with honest credit money. That will level the playing field and bring prosperity to everyone.
Yeah, I'm just flipping between the chat and Facebook and things of that nature. Hello, Harriet. Hello, Tessa. I see your folks in the chat. Welcome to the show. Of course, if you'd like to put something in the chat, you're more than welcome as usual, or you can also call in to the show as well. So one of the things we put out there, and there has been some discussion on it, and it sounds like you probably have some knowledge of this too, is the fair tax.
Yes, that's, you know, that's a good thing. It would that is a huge economic stimulus. What the fair tax does is it replaces Karl Marx's graduated income tax. You know, people don't realize that the graduated income tax came right out of the Communist Manifesto of 1848, written by Karl Marx. And so the free tax, the fair tax, is something that I've been credited as the author back in 1993. I published the idea in the Arkansas Democrat Gazette here in Little Rock. I got a big response to that article. And then suddenly 2 years later, unbeknownst to me, I was hoping when I published it that somebody that had the wherewithal would take it and run with it. Because I, you know, it was just an idea that was thrown out there. And it's amazing. Sometimes ideas can grow their own legs and start walking by themselves. And so 2 years after I published it, some billionaire businessmen in Houston liked the idea, apparently got behind it, hired Stanford economists to look into it, Harvard economists looked into it, They spent about $20 million researching the effects of, you know, the fair tax, and it's just incredible. Basically, all the things that I predicted in my article, that the kind of impact that a fair tax would have, it will just stimulate the economy. It gives every worker in America their full paycheck without any income taxes pulled out of it. It gives every small business in America freedom from payroll taxes, which and that's where I got the idea. I was a small businessman back at the time, and I was wondering, why am I having to spend so much time doing accounting for the government, taking taxes out of my employees' checks and sending it to the government? Why was I being burdened as their accountant to do all that? It's involuntary servitude, unconstitutional. And so I said, there's got to be another plan. And so I started studying all the various forms of taxation. And I thought, well, the sales tax is really the most progressive tax because everybody pays, you know, it's equal, it's uniform. Anytime people, you know, buy something, they can pay it. If you don't want to buy something, you can save it, and you've got your savings is untaxed. You're not taxed until you spend it. So that gives you a chance to invest wisely, to save it, to buy the things you need. But just having all the millions of American workers, imagine taking home a full paycheck every week, what kind of stimulus would that create? It would be a huge economic boom. And what it does, it removes the hidden income tax that's in every product you buy. You know, so if you buy American products, you're paying for the income tax that had to go into the making of that product. You're paying the payroll tax. So when you eliminate that payroll tax, the income tax, you take that cost out of the product, and then you replace it with a sales tax. And so it kind of leaves the product at a neutral price. And it's also like as if the income tax just completely disappeared.
Well, one of the things,
so this business the economy, and so you know that's basically in a nutshell how it works. To learn more about it, you can go to fairtax.org.
Well, I'm chatting here with someone here on Facebook, and thank you very much for your contributions, and perhaps he'll call on later. Is what about what's the fair tax? Is the federal government getting the money, of course, and then what they do is to give out grants to the different states or what have you, and then I want to bring this back to where the taxes and elections are tied. Of course, that would be with, you know, tax breaks and loopholes and things like that to these big businesses, of course, for political favors. But also, you know, they take these monies and they give them the grants to the different states, but of course they always have strings attached to them. How would you address that?
Well, in my original article, my suggestion was that we have just one national tax that was equally divided between local, state, and federal government. That was my original plan. I believe that is now that it's been proposed before Congress. And they really don't have a plan to share it equally like that. You know, my thinking was in the original article that there should be one tax that we can see, and it should fund everything. Why have it more, you know, complicated by having all these various taxes that were taxed every which way, you know, but loose? And it's just, you can't even keep track of it all. You probably pay a lot more than half of your wealth in the various taxes that are collected. So it's hard to keep track of it. And so I think the best thing to do is have one national sales tax that's divided up between local, state, and federal government. And so that would just, you know, but the important thing is eliminating the income tax. It's a choker chain on productivity. And it also gives this government a grip around our throats. You know, are we really free when we got to report every transaction we make to the government, to the IRS, under the threat of a bayonet? You know, is that freedom? No, it's not. And so this fair tax thing was written back in 1993, and since that time, probably around 2003, and studying further, I came up with my path of tax-free. It's we're using a script system. You can actually, there's no debt, and it's a debt-free, tax-free money system. So it's not how you tax, you know, it's how you issue money. And if you issue money right, according to my pamphlet, you can have a tax-free, you know, script system, similar to what they created in colonial America in Ben Franklin's time. They already had taxes in place. They never eliminated those taxes, but under the script system, they never had to raise those taxes because, you know, the revenue was they could create the money as they needed it. And they spent it on public projects, and they loaned it to local farmers, and it created a velocity and productivity and trade that powered up wealth in the marketplace and made colonial America became the richest region of the world. And it became so powerful and independent that, you know, that's what made them independent. That's what caused the American Revolution. As a matter of fact, when England became jealous of the colonial script system, they outlawed it. And Ben Franklin said that was the true cause of the revolution. The taxes on tea and stamps was just a straw that broke a camel's back. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of history there. And I recommend people should get addicted to history like I am. History gives you enlightenment and vision and foresight.
One of the drawing here a question from the chat here. And we'll move forward with a question I've got for you. Are you familiar with Hydro? Hydro, it says, thank you, Harriet, for your contribution here. It says, Hydro is run by the left, how they plan to destroy our elections. They are prepared, funded with $1.69 billion. They are legion. There are over 80 national groups involved. They will not stop Hydro. Okay, it says, the group working towards the left are the NAACP, Unions, Common Cause, League of Women Voters, Progress Now, NPR, La Raza, MSNBG, I guess you meant C though, says U.S. Vote and more, says why. The organizations on the left aren't playing to win free and fair elections, they're playing to end them, but it can be defeated with your help. Thank you very much, Harriet. And then also from Facebook, we'll talk about the tax. It says, how will Congress be stopped once they get their hands on the money? They won't care about the states, but about to dole it out to get reelected. And I think that thank you very much from Facebook. Excuse me there, sorry, thanks for the cough. And I think that brings it back to, you know, the rigging of elections. Now, one thing I'd like to cover, you know, at some point, this could be a whole show, just like the new currency canon. That's definitely something you and I can do it at some point, probably after the Free and Equals United We Stand Festival is talk about that. So, you know, about this doling out the money to get reelected, and also I'd like to talk about later on about, of course, you know, a big subject with the voting machines. But let's go back to the way that with Congress and doling out this money. And using that the way to control elections.
Okay, I'm not sure. What was your question again?
Well, the question, let me scroll up here because there was a message from Facebook. Says, how will Congress be stopped? Once they get their hands on the money, they won't care about the states, but how to dole it out to get reelected. And I believe that's in reference to the equal sharing of the tax money you talked about to each of the states and localities.
Right. Well, the fair tax is, like I say, it's before Congress. They've got a bill before the Senate. They got a bill before the House. It has sponsors that are growing. I haven't read to see if they've made any changes lately. But, yeah, that is, you know, that's a legitimate concern. Are we going to give you know, I would only give that power to the federal government provided we get rid of the 16th Amendment and get rid of the income tax first, because one of the concerns I have is if we let the federal government add that, you know, what if they just hit us with a national sales tax, but they go ahead and keep the income tax, like Herman Cain plan with his 999, which I was totally against, to have a 9% fair tax. Yeah, and so you don't want to have both. The whole idea behind the fair tax is to eliminate the income tax. of income tax is absurd. There's no way that it can be uniform or fair. You have the lobbyists that get the big corporations all the exemptions, and you've got people that are involved in criminal activities that they don't pay any income taxes. And it's also been said that roughly about 50% of Americans even pay income taxes. So there's nothing fair about it. And so what do you do to replace that? The wrong process is just get rid of the Federal Reserve, and then the income tax goes down with it, because all the money collected in income taxes just goes to pay on the phony debt, interest on the phony debt. Now, that may be all we need to get rid of the income tax. You know, what are we going to replace the Fed with? And like I said, it's alternative currencies, tax-free currencies. And the question being, what if they keep all of that money? Yeah, they could do that. So that's a possibility, and that's why I like the idea of my tax-free, the new American money system. And it actually proposes is that each of the 50 states should be able to issue their own currencies, just like they did in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and colonial times. Each state should have their own script system that's convertible into dollars, and so that you have your own local tax-free, debt-free currency. If you want to go and spend money in another state, then you convert it into dollars, you know. And so if the dollar collapses, we'd have to replace the dollar with something. And I would propose that we replace the dollar is now issued as a Federal Reserve note. If we issued the dollar as a Treasury note, it could be spent in circulation tax-free.
Right. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I know some folks who are also, also talk about getting back to the gold standard. I just don't know if there's even enough gold and silver and precious metals to cover all the, all the Federal Reserve notes that are out there. But at this time, I do have Kelly on the line. Kelly is the author of The Hidden Fourth Branch, also has a website of the same name, hiddenfourthbranch.com. He's co-hosted some shows with me and also produced some shows here for Bard's Logic. And so I'm going to open up the mic here. Thank you very much, Kelly, for coming on. How are you?
Hey, good. Hey, gentlemen, we're getting some really good rain where I'm living at. We desperately need it.
And this is Mr. Doogie King on the line as well, so we've got both the lines open.
Okay, well, good. Well, yeah, I just wanted to congratulate this gentleman. The income tax is a stinking mess. It's so purposely confusing. I mean, my gosh, we can put a man on the moon, we can invent the light bulb, the telephone, we can't figure out how to make a simple tax. What the heck's wrong? And if you're in political opposition, per se, you can easily get audited. So there's an awful lot of problems with the IRS system. I'm kind of a little bit bothered with the fair tax because I've done a lot of research on history, and I like the apportionment system where, per the census, California, say you've got 20% of the population, I'm just guessing here in these numbers, but 20% of the population or 10%, okay, so that's what the census says. Federal government says, here's our anticipated budget. California, write us a check. We don't care how you get the money from your own people. Like North Dakota might have like 1%. All right, you owe us 1%. We don't care how you get it from your people. That was what the founding fathers set up. How many years did our government operate, the federal government operate without an income tax system? The answer is 150 years. There's import duties, tariffs. There is... of course, apportionment, I just mentioned that, but there's also, when we were on the gold standard, what happened was a miner would work all day, present his gold, and he'd get a piece of paper, which is backed by gold. So we had, obviously, systems in place that worked. How do we get back to enough gold? Well, FDR decided, gold's illegal in the 30s. So I had an associate, his uncle went to jail because he still wouldn't turn in his gold. And in the 40s, they shut down the gold mine. FDR did this. Basically, wait a minute, we got a war going on and we can't get to our resources of gold. Are you nuts? Well, FDR was something else. So if we can open up mining again, I'm in the mining industry. I got a claim. I get mined. I get gold every time I go out. You know, we can if we open up our resources better, we can actually solve some of these problems. But one of the biggest problems I'm having with a fair tax is simply we send money to the federal government. They turn around and they say, okay, states, here's the deal. We're going to give you money that, you know, is yours in the first place. We're going to give you the money, but you must do A, B, C, D through Z. One of the biggest ones California sends is their transportation tax from their road tax, et cetera, et cetera. And it's going to come back to us under heavy strings and heavy terms. This is spooky. This is how the federal government keeps growing and growing and growing and dictates to the states. For example, health care. Let's look at health care. Obubu care, okay? I know Robert likes that word, Obubu. President Obubu. So, you know, yeah. So he's got this great health care plan, and guess what's going to happen to states that aren't going to accept it? Sorry, you just don't get federal funding. I mean, yeah, we'll give you a little bit, but other states are going to. And there's another power with the apportionment system. It's called state nullification. Now, states are lighting up saying, we're not going to enforce Obamacare. So I think it's four now states that said, look, if you enforce the NDAA, you're going to jail. Okay, it's federal law. Anybody in the state that enforces this, they're going to jail. Sorry. We're going to protect our citizens. State nullification has enormous power. Well, there's the power of the purse. The power of the purse is, look, federal government, you're out of line, and we're just not going to send our apportionment this year. I mean, I'm sorry. We're just what happened during the Civil War. Oh, gee, the federal government lost about half its money. This is a way for the states to hold the federal government accountable. And with the fair tax, see, that's what bothers me is, you know, it's not a system that will reduce the size of the federal government. It is a big pocket of money that comes in, and the feds can say, you have to do this, you can get the money back. I mean, there's just concerns. So, you know, in the ideal world, the apportionment system is set up this way. Okay, here's your anticipated budget. Well, here's our part. And that's it. It goes to D.C., it stays there, and does other things for the sake of the Union of States. It's a one-time thing. The money goes one way. It doesn't come back with control strings. That's my main concern with the fair tax.
And real quick, Dugan, before you address that, and yeah, I know it's a discussion anyone who talks about the fair tax will have, and we've had those here before, but there was someone here in chat was asking about the AR bucks. The Facebook page, I believe, on that. Can you reiterate, like, how they can find that, what they can maybe put in the search engine on Facebook to find it?
Yeah, just go to the RBUC, which is...
Can you spell that out for them? Because I think they're getting the...
ARBUCK, just like it sounds. RBUC, Arkansas AR, that's the symbol for Arkansas, and then buck is in the dollar, RBUC. And so go to the RBUC by typing in the search box in Facebook, and you'll see several posts in there about alternative currencies, about monetary history, monetary science. It's a good learning experience, and I'm always posting things in there. And so anyone that's interested in what I call monetary science, which is a subject you're not going to find that at the college curriculum or at the high school level. It's something that, you know, they swept under the rug. What they teach is economics. You're going to either get Keynesian or Austrian economics.
Right.
I'm from another school. I'm from what I call American economics. Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, Andrew Jackson, John F. Kennedy, the people that tried to introduce script systems as a way to counter the power of the debt money, the central bankers.
And if we can, and thank you for clearing that up with the spelling and things of that, for people to do searches and read up on that and share it. But with the with Kelly's concern, let's go ahead and get that out of the way, and not get it out of the way, but I mean let's address it is what I meant. So.
Well, I think Kelly brings up a concern that I'm also concerned about myself. In the original fair tax plan that I wrote, it's a sales tax, and it's collected on the local level, and then it's distributed, it's divided by three, and the county keeps you know, one third. They give one third to the state, and they send one third to the federal government, and that keeps, you know, that puts the money under local control, under local distribution. And it's a three-way split: local, state, and federal. And so then the federal government would be basically like you were talking about, Telly. They wouldn't have to sit back and wait on the states to send them the money.
Right. So the money. Let me see if I. So two-thirds would go to.
I don't think it does that.
I'm sorry.
Well, I certainly like the local.
Right now, I have to go study to see how they tweaked it. It's basically it's going to be probably sent all to the federal government, and I agree with Kelly that that's a problem. But I also believe that, man, anything is better than the income tax.
I'm there with you as far as getting rid of the stupid IRS. But you know, by the way, when you put the words Z and IRS together, it spells theirs.
Yeah.
if you will go ahead and say, okay, one-third local, hey, I like that, okay. One-third state, and then one-third federal, that means that the amount of money given to the state government equals that to the federal government. It's like, wait. So
yeah,
you're giving equal power to the federal government, equal power financially to the federal government, equal to what the state keeps for itself. That's kind of a... That's a concern to me. I would rather see something like one-fifth or one-tenth.
That's what I look at as a balancing of power.
Well, two-thirds would stay with the federal government, and
the state of Arkansas has 70 counties to collect from.
Two-thirds of it would stay within the state. Because one-third would be for taking care of state expenses. Another third would be going towards local expenses, which, of course, is within the state. So two-thirds of the money would actually stay within the state, and only one-third would go to the federal – one-third would go to the federal government, and the two-thirds would go to the state.
Government money like that, they would have to pull back to where they go only to their constitutional limitations is all they can afford to do.
Well, that's assuming they'll follow the Constitution.
Say again?
That's assuming that the Republicans and Democrats will follow the Constitution. You know, they cite the Constitution when it's to their political advantage, and then they play games with the Constitution and ignore it when they're trying to get their programs done. We don't really, if we faced it, our federal government is not following the Constitution. I mean, it's just spooky.
Oh, I agree with that. That's the biggest problem we've got right now is that the Constitution is just ignored. It's only they only refer to it when there's a benefit to them. But the Constitution, it's up to the people. You know, the Constitution, a lot of people think, well, the government enforces the Constitution on us. No, it's up to the people to enforce the Constitution on the government because, you know, otherwise they're going to slip the restraints, and that's what they've done. They slipped the restraints of the Constitution basically in 1913 when they created the income tax and the Federal Reserve and got us involved in World War One to increase the debt. They pretty much made the Constitution just a piece of paper like the Bible, something that we respect but we can't live up to.
Well, I want to transition into an example how the federal government has really hurt us regarding honest elections. And I know you're on that, and I'm glad. There's so many people. I'm a core member of Watch the Vote 2012, and I have learned more than I ever wanted to know. The stupid Help America Vote Act, okay? Well, let's federal government go ahead and pay for these electronic machines. So, yeah, let's help. We're going to help the disabled and the old and the people in the handicapped, whatever. Really? And so you have... Computer code, Supreme Court has ruled, you cannot investigate it because it is intellectual property. It is protected under copyright. So they can write a code. They can get their people elected. Oh, we're going to have these updates. Who's going to right before the election? Are you serious? So these machines have been proven, especially in Europe. They got rid of their electronic machines. Recently, New York Senate said, yeah, local jurisdictions, you can go back to mechanical levers instead of electronic machines. It is spooky that For example, Cuyahoga County, which is Cleveland, Ohio, there was 100 precincts in which Romney only, he got less than 1% votes. And you're telling me that there wasn't electronic shenanigans going on there? This is a great, computer programmed in those 3 or 4 languages, and I know this great potential exists, and the federal government's getting involved in this. This is pretty spooky. So when the federal government has that much power that says, look, we're going to pay for your machines, and they get it in, and this is another example of power through the purse, which can affect our elections. I mean, I'm spooked at the federal government having more and more power anyway whatsoever than what was set up in the Constitution.
And I agree with you. I've seen firsthand how blatant, in-your-face, corrupt elections are. Elections are rigged, and it's a two-party duopoly, and so they've got that power. The power to the ones that are supposed to enforce the Constitution is the Supreme Court. What are they doing? You know, how could a conservative Supreme Court rule that this health care, Obama's health care program, the federal government imposing on the states? You know, the health care is a state issue. Each state has its own democracy. That's a domestic matter. And the federal government has no business involving themselves in our domestic matters. We have our own elected democracies on the state level. We only created the federal government to do about 17 or 18 things, and then we put limitations on it. And so with the Civil War, when the enforcing power against the federal government at one time was state power. It was a balance of power between the states and the federal government. Well, the Civil War pretty much destroyed state power. And so now they've infringed, they've come in, they're meddling in our domestic affairs. They're meddling in all the affairs of the world, every country in the world. They've got CIA and spies all over the place, aggravating these countries, creating blowback. That's what terrorism is. It's blowback because we're over there messing with them, just like Ron Paul tried to tell people. And so, this is what we're dealing with. We've got to put restraints. We've got to put the constitutional harness back on the federal government because they've escaped it. They're meddling in state affairs, foreign affairs, and now they're meddling in our personal affairs. Do we have privacy? Do we even have a Fourth Amendment rights anymore?
Wow. Well, that's why I say, hi, I'm Kelly. I'm from FEMA Region 9. I used to be from the once great state of California. I want to address another issue about federal power. You know, the more we keep funding them, the more powerful they get. We had Sheriff Jeff Christopher from Delaware, Sussex County, and he ran on the platform of, I will not let the federal government take your guns if I'm elected. Boom. He got in as sheriff. Delaware, you think East, maybe more liberal, but no, he got elected. And then he had to, the state legislature says, sheriff can't arrest people anymore. That's up to the state troopers and the federal marshal. Oh, really? Then it's mm-hmm. Carson Tucker was on. We've got to bring him back on because he's got an update. Pennsylvania is about to fall as well. But what can happen in that scenario, and I pointed that out in the show, is that the Delaware legislature can be told by the federal government, hey, look, we're not going to fund you unless you let our federal agents come in and arrest some people we think are bad. And so that again, is the federal government, too much power, playing games, dictating to the states through money, through grants. Where'd the money come from? The people of the county. Goes to the federal government, comes back with heavy strings. It's just this. The power of the purse is very scary, and we just have to address this with the fair tax. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think the fair tax is it's not perfect, but it's a lot better than what we have. And if we can maybe tweak what they've got to, I think to go back to what I think that it should be a tax is elected on the local level. Let them, be the ones that collect it, and then they can send the federal government their share and the state their share and keep the local share To me, that creates kind of a balance of power. I'm a Jeffersonian. I believe in what Jefferson called county republic. I call it village sovereignty. You give a village or a neighborhood, you give the people as much power as they need to manage their own neighborhood affairs, and the residual powers are divided up on the state and federal level, whatever those powers should be. But we don't need a federal government telling us how to educate our children, telling us that we got to buy health care insurance and outlining how health care works, and all the things that where the federal government is invading the domestic affairs of the states. That's why we're bankrupt.
I agree.
They created all of these obligations to themselves, and it requires more and more taxation, and it's gotten so big it's just all a big waste.
Well, let me throw this out, how I would lean a little bit more positively towards a fair tax, okay?
Okay.
So we say the fair tax, instead of one-third come down to, 33%, 20%, or 15%, whatever. I mean, that's from every state times 50. That's a heck of a lot of money for a federal government. All right, so we reduce that. Number two, the state collects the money from its people. Then the check is written, say quarterly, I don't care, quarterly, and it goes one direction, and that's it. It doesn't come back with grants, with strings. One direction, that's it, that's all you're getting, that's what your budget was, that's what you expected, that's what we paid you. It's collected by the state government, and is sent one check a quarter, and that's it. Don't give us our money back. Don't give us strings. That way you would have a system of nullification, if necessary, to provide the accountability, as mentioned in Prince versus U.S. and Justice Scalia. Scalia, he's like my hero. He said, we have a system of dual sovereignty, states versus the federal government, each to keep each other in check. And that was brilliant. I mean, he knew how the country was founded.
Yeah,
so that's why I would lean more positively towards a fair tax.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I agree with that. It's not perfect. I would make some. I don't like the way they tweaked it, but I agree with you. I think that the money should not be flowing down from the top. It should be flowing up from the grassroots.
Oh, absolutely. I got a hold of a book. I was looking at mining and where all the hot mines are in the county I live in, Siskiyou County, northern, right on the edge of Oregon. I got a hold of this little book. It's called The Empire of the Mountains. Written 1906, 1905, a gorgeous book. Unbelievable. The theme was Siskiyou County was not only self-sufficient, people were prospering, and we were exporting. And that happened all the way till the 70s with logging and then the stupid spotted owl lie and much other stuff. People around here now, there's an awful lot of alcoholism, a lot of broken families, a lot of single moms, and the feds are way too much, and we are not able to provide. We have some of the greatest natural resources in the country, and we can't get to them. And what I saw in that book was, oh, my gosh, this county knew how to take care of itself and was thriving. And then the feds got involved. And I'm sure this has happened all over the country. We can take care of our own. Just leave us alone. Yeah, we'll pay for military and a few other things. But it happened. It was a gorgeous book.
One of the things that some of the most inspiring reading that I've ever read are the numerous letters that Thomas Jefferson wrote in his lifetime. If you collect it, I believe they've collected as many letters as they can, and it amounts to about 60 volumes, I believe, at the major library up in Washington, D.C. There's 60 volumes of Jeffersonian philosophy, and one of the letters that he wrote to Samuel Kirchhoff in 1812, after he retired from the presidency, he was able to look back, and he wrote a little article where he explained his theory of the county republic, and he said that the county should be divided into wards, and the wards or neighborhoods should be given, sovereignty, all the domestic power, and to where the people that live there could have a voice and a vote and participate in a Athenian, he didn't know it at the time when he wrote it, but it was basically a match to the Athenian democracy, was what he was proposing. We didn't know what the Athenian democracy was like until they discovered Aristotle's Constitution of Athens, and I believe it was 1870, long after Jefferson. And so we're just looking to see. I was able to compare the Athenian Constitution, the part where Cleisthenes divides Athens up into little democratic neighborhoods, dems. And so it's basically what Jefferson had proposed. And in Little Rock, I proposed it. I redrafted it and tweaked it to be modern. It's called the Model Charter City-State, a blueprint for democracy. And I started organizing the neighborhoods. I used to be the president of the downtown neighborhood in Little Rock, Arkansas, Downtown Neighborhood Association. And I proposed that and couldn't believe how City Hall was going to divide up their power. And it was going to divide up, you know, rob powers from the state. But, I think if people will check Jefferson's little article, his letter to Samuel Kochival, 1812, where he talks about county republics and what I would call, explains the benefits of village sovereignty.
Well, some of the things that he did, you know, ended up in townships. Townships have 36 sections.
Right.
It's rather interesting if you look at, you know, I do engineering surveying, and it's just fascinating to see, you know, each section is a mile, and the township is 6 miles by 6 miles. Right. Within that is 36 sections. Well, then, you know, my grandpa would talk about the local school and how they'd go there, and the locals were involved in the whole school system, and, you know, it seemed to work really well until we had, oh, that's right, Carter. He decided, well, let's have a federal education department, and that's turned into a disaster. So this whole thinking, and ironically, California, as liberal as we are, that's thanks to the unions, but we have a system, we can charter counties, charter cities. And if you have a charter county, you can basically, the county can put the middle finger to quite a bit of the legislation of the state. It's in our Constitution. So somebody in California was thinking, you know, studying Jeffersonian thinking, is that the sovereignty, and the way it works is the charter city trumps what the charter county says. And we've got, I don't know how many dozens between cities and counties. Tehama County is a charter county. It is a local autonomy system.
That's the way it should be.
And these are definitely ways, you know, gentlemen, that, you know, for people to learn about and read up more about and do more research and use that as a way to, you know, start really getting into, you know, as we're talking about tonight, reforming the electoral system and having it where it's the grassroots, you know, bringing it out so that, you know, we have, you know, and this is where I want to start bringing this topic up about the rigged elections. I know, Kelly, I believe you have much to say on this, is about the voting machines.
Was that to me or your guest?
Well, either one, but I thought you and I had a conversation where we were talking about some of the different, you know, things going on with the voting machines and how there's actually a push to go back to the hand counting of the ballots.
Well, yeah, let me throw out some statistics or statistical analysis from the primaries. You know, I'm a big Ron Paul fan. Obviously, your guest is too. Who won Ohio? According to statistical analysis done by Francois Choquette, we got to get him on the program, by the way. Santorum actually won Ohio, not Romney. Who won Iowa? Well, first it was Romney, and then one of the members of our group watched the vote. Edward True, he called him on it. He said, "No, am I?" You know, they were short. Like 8 votes, it was that close. But, oh, Romney won. He called them. He went on CNN, and they recounted, and Santorum actually won. First time in American history when a political party has reversed their primary results. Well, come to find out who really won. Well, I was raised in Iowa. I was at our precinct. We call them caucuses. It's people. Actually, people right there. You push people forward for delegates. You become a caucus delegate, then you go to the county, then you go to the district. I went all the way to district. Well, you do not push your people up forward in delegate count unless you have boots on the ground. Caucus systems are awesome. Well, what happened was Ron Paul got 22 of the, I think 25 of the delegates to go to the national convention. That means who won? Actually, it was Ron Paul in Iowa. But no, they're tampering, they're playing games. And you look at New Hampshire, and let's look at South Carolina. South Carolina, who got second place? Well, it said Romney did, but according to statistical analysis by Francois Choquette, Ron Paul got second. According to other statistical analysis he did and another person, Ron Paul won New Hampshire. This, what I'm saying is the temptation to write programming code and flip votes is there with the electronic machines, and it's point-blank spooky. That's why we got rid of these. Just like we need to get rid of these machines just like they did in Europe.
Well, that reminds me of the video I saw. I think it was Aaron Russo that put out, what was it, Freedom to Fascism, I believe. And in there, he showed a video clip of a Superior Court judge in Florida back during the 2000 Bush-Gore elections, where that, you know, that was a big mess in Florida. But, you know, this guy testified, he was a computer programmer, and he said that it was easy to rig a voting machine. You simply slip a program in the machine that if the voting turns out, you know, the way you don't want it, then it flips the vote to 51-49% in favor of the loser, and then the program that flips it erases itself. And this guy explained that how it worked to the judge in the Superior Court. And it was in that film. And so I looked into it, and I started, there's this company called ES&S. And they produce the majority of the voting, the computer voting machines in the country. And one of the curious things in researching that, I discovered that ES&S had been founded by Chuck Hagel, who is now our Secretary of State, Chuck Hagel. He was the founder of that company, and he sold a majority interest of it to the House of Rothschild. So I didn't research it any further. I don't know the accuracy of that, but I thought, that's interesting. We got central bankers owning these voting machines that have the capability of flipping votes. And here recently in Arkansas, we had medical marijuana on the ballot, and I noticed that the voting total came out 51-49 against marijuana. I thought that was interesting.
Well, yeah, Clinton Curtis, he was a programmer for, I believe it was YSI in Florida. He testified in a congressional hearing that he was asked by, the company was asked by a client to program the results, 51-49, and they asked him, will they ever be able to find this out? Nope, never. You'll never find it in the code. And so they asked a few more questions. What's interesting about that whole the video, you can watch it on YouTube. Just type in Clinton Curtis.
That's the guy.
And when the background behind that is there were cameras rolling, CNN and others, and not one of them, mainstream, ever published it. Somebody happened to have a cell phone that recorded the whole thing, and that's why it's not a very high-quality video. It's spooky. Why don't we know about this? So, I mean, we got to get Jim Condon on to explain this a lot more because he told me more than I ever wanted to know about this problem.
Well, I'll definitely have to give him a call and get that set up. I've been meaning to call him. I just haven't had the opportunity to call him yet. Well, I'm hearing just some background sound. I don't know where that's coming from. So, you gentlemen still on the line?
Yes, I'm here, Robert.
Kelly?
I'm hitting my mute button so that you wouldn't pick up any background,
but I can hear the
static.
I hear some kind of. I don't know if that's from was from Kelly or not. You there, Kelly?
Yeah, I'm muted.
Okay. Well, that's fine. I didn't know what that was. I'm not having people hit the view both of the lines. I don't know what that is with that. So we'll just go ahead and continue on. Sorry about the interruption. But one of the things, you know, we're here for tonight, Dugan, and the folks listening on, if those listening to the archives, is to talk about the Free and Equal United We Stand Festival in Arkansas on June the 22nd. And you mentioned earlier in our conversation earlier today, Dugan, some of the other guests that are going to be speaking at the concert. So why don't we give the folks a list of some of those who will be speaking there. Or, you know, there's also musicians who will be playing there.
Okay. Let's see. Let me get to the ideal here. Well, first of all, we've got Jesse Ventura coming to speak, and he's recently written a book about the two-party system and his independent run for office as governor of Minnesota. He says he would never run for president as a, you know, as a partisan. You know, he would run as an independent. And so he's going to come and help us launch our movement for, you know, independent, free, and equal election. And so he's right now the top name at our event. We've also invited other people like Ron Paul and Andrew Napolitano, Judge Napolitano. We've invited Willie Nelson. They're considering it. They haven't committed yet. We do have a commitment from Ralph Nader, who will appear via the social media. And then there's other up-and-coming fighters for freedom. Maytha Alhaston, who is a let me get her information up there. She's going to come and speak. We've got Ben Swan, Amber Lyon, who was a CNN journalist. I guess she was too honest for CNN, so now she's out on her own. But she'll be speaking about her experiences with CNN at this event. And then we're going to have bands such as the Golden State Band, musicians like Tatiana Moroz, who is a very excellent, beautiful singer-songwriter, Jordan Page, another singer-songwriter. And I think it's okay to go ahead and announce that we've got a commitment from Saving Abel. And there may be another commitment that Christina is holding back to announce later, but this thing is growing. We're about 6 weeks out. The event is on June 22nd, and my hometown of Little Rock, Arkansas, has been chosen because it's in the center of the United States, and we expect people from all over the country to come. This is the launching of something very unique. We're calling it the Unification Movement. We have people from all, especially here in Little Rock, the people involved in the Arkansas Free and Equal Caucus are from all different political persuasions. We have libertarians, we have occupiers, Tea Partiers, Green Partiers, and we have ex-Democrats and ex-Republicans who have come on board. And we're all working together to bust the two-party control of our election. And so this is a big event. We're calling it the Unification Movement. Just think about it. Wall Street has got America divided up into two warring camps. The Democrats and the Republicans, and they divide, and those are splintered up into hundreds of little groups, and so that's Wall Street's strategy. They use the media to splinter us up in all these groups to keep us divided. We blame each other instead of blaming the culprits behind the curtain, and that's how they like it. That's how it's been by design. So the Free and Equal Movement, we're out to educate people, say, hey, let's quit being split up and divided, because divided we fall, and united we stand. So that's why we're calling it the United We Stand Festival. We're uniting people from all political persuasions, and we're finding that everyone agrees. We've got to break this two-party dialectic control system over our elections. And that's what Free and Equal is all about. It's June 22nd at Verizon Arena in Little Rock. That's a Saturday. Starts at 6, goes to 10 p.m. We're going to have fun with top-notch music, and we're going to have inspirational speakers, and we're going to do something great by having fun. And it's positive, nonpartisan, nonprofit, grassroots, pure grassroots. So If you're into the Liberty Movement, come to Little Rock on June 22nd and support the Free and Equal Movement, because I think this is the first unification movement that I've ever heard of. It's usually us versus them in anything political. But here for the first time, we're experimenting. We're bringing people together from all persuasions, because, and we're discovering that patriots come in all stripes and colors.
Well, that's great, and that's definitely what we promote here on Bard's Logic is the grassroots, and you know, I do call it the Grassroots We the People show. And I do have a message here from Kelly. You still there, Kelly? I know you've got to go in a few, so if you have any parting comments, go ahead.
Well, yeah, you know, I really appreciate this guy coming on, and I hope we can connect off the air, but I got to go work on an expert witness case. I'm a civil engineer, going to talk about dirt tomorrow, but I got to get on that. But yeah, I'm just once again, Robert, you got an awesome guest.
No, thank you very much. And we're looking to get some of those folks. Go ahead.
My Facebook page is Dugan King, D-U-G-A-N, Dugan King, K-I-N-G, on Facebook. I use Facebook not so much, you know, to socialize, but I use it as kind of a magazine to reach out to liberty-minded people. So you'll find all kinds of little articles and little posts there. You're welcome to send me a friend request. And I try to educate using my own little Dugan King Facebook page. So if you would like to look into it, send me a friend request, and I'll be happy to respond.
Awesome. Well, I got to go. Good night, folks.
Good night, Kelly. And of course, as I said, that's Kelly Mordecai, also author of the HiddenForthBranch.com, and that's hidden, the number 4th, branch.com, and also the book of the same name. You can pick up that book at Amazon. So go ahead and check it out. I highly recommend it. And thank you again, Kelly, for coming on the show. I do see he has gone. And so, yes, you know, another thing I really like to work on is stay tuned for Bard's Logic. We are looking to get some other folks who are going to be speaking at the festival. I've got some feelers out for some people to come on to the show and talk about what they've got going on. Of course, talk about their contribution to the festival, things of that nature. I won't go into who I'm all reaching out to yet, but we'll, you know, I'll put that information out as it comes. So we'll do it that way. And I'm actually, for the folks who do not know, I'm making plans and working on some things to go there in Arkansas myself. It'll be great to meet some folks there, and looking to doing a live show there from or near the festival itself. Of course, it won't be during the festival. It'd be a special time here of doing the show, not as its regular 10 p.m. Eastern time. It probably would be, I think, sometime in the afternoon or early evening, sometime before the festival would begin. And I'm also working on some things with Randy Stufflebeam from the Constitution Party. That he may come on to the show tonight. I know he had some things that he was going to work on this evening for his show and things of that nature, and other things he's working on. So there's definitely some things in the works. There's definitely things that we're trying to put out there for the grassroots, for them to look at and be a part of and be active, because it's very important. And I want to reiterate what I said earlier, that even though there's not another election until 2014, and it's still relatively early here in 2013, that it's important to get involved now and get involved early before it's too late. And one of those ways, of course, would be for people to share this show tonight and share some of the other episodes, and that's easy. Just share this link to everyone you know, basically, especially your liberty-minded grassroots folks. Doesn't matter, Dugan said, which party they're from, whether they're a Green Party, which as an environmentalist, I kind of, you know, kind of a kindred spirit in some ways with them. And then, of course, the Constitution Party, Libertarian. And there are, you know, I'm not saying there isn't any liberty-minded folks in the Republican and Democrat parties, because there are liberty-minded folks in those parties as well. So share that out for people can hear this information that, as you pointed out, Dugan, we point out here as well, is that you're not going to hear from the mainstream media. You're not going to probably hear even from the Rush Limbaughs or the Sean Hannitys or even Fox News. These are some of the things that you'll hear almost items, dare say, not quite exclusively, but in one of the very rare places that you'll hear this type of information, especially what you're talking about earlier, Dugan, with the unit, the script, currency, the things of that nature. So, share it out, and I'll mention it to the people who newly came on to listen. You could either share the link, which is preferable, but also you can download it so you can play it and share the file with folks so they can listen to it as well. And the reason I say preferable for the sharing of the link is it just gives me an opportunity to monitor the numbers and things of that nature. But also, of course, check out the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, and that is at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. And, of course, to get email updates, just go to here on Blog Talk Radio, go to the show's homepage, and under the icon, you'll find a little follow button. Just click that, and you will get email updates on when the show airs and what it's about. So thank you very much for listening. So go ahead, Dugan. We've got about 29 minutes left of the live show. So, we'll touch on, a few other topics, or we can go back to some of the older ones that we talked about earlier this evening. Okay, did I lose you, or do you on mute, or?
Okay, yeah.
Just
you were talking about the mainstream media, Robert, and one of the things that, I've done some research into that, and these big corporations like Fox, CNN, MSNBC, and that they're all basically giant corporations. They're controlled by Wall Street. They create this dialectic, but everything that we see, for example, on cable, I've thought so many times I just need to yank that cable out of my wall because it's not a good deal. You get mostly channels full of advertising, and you get this filtered and programmed junk, and you get the news, it's filtered and programmed and biased. And so what good is cable television with all its expense when on the Internet, like I said, is a game changer. You can yank that cable TV out of your wall, and you really won't miss any entertainment just by going with the Internet. You can get movies. You can get TV shows. It's the mammal, whereas there's a lot of things that are now, we haven't, figured it out yet, but there's a lot of things that are dinosaurs when compared to the Internet, the phone book, the television, newspapers, and I think even elections are going to be different in the future because of the Internet. So this is the new technology. The Internet allows you and me to connect like we're doing tonight, and it allows everyone to connect with each other. It's the first true free marketplace of ideas that we've had, and we can't let the government regulate that in any way because this belongs to the people.
Right, and them trying to do the Internet tax, which we talked about on a couple of shows ago, but of course people can listen to that show in the archives. We talked to them on that. That's the first step to them regulating it, as you said, is let's go ahead and tax these small Internet businesses. And then, of course, once they start taxing the things on the Internet, well, then, of course, now they're going to have to monitor it. Well, now that they're monitoring, first they have to regulate, to make sure these people are paying these taxes that have these small online businesses. Well, of course, now that they have to regulate it, now they have to monitor it, now they're monitoring the Internet.
Yeah.
I mean, they're doing so, in some extent now, but it's going to be even more intrusive and invasive.
Well, what they start off getting their toe in the door, like they did with the original income tax. It was only like a small percentage of the highest incomes paid the income tax. But now, look, it's grown to a monstrosity. The same thing's going to happen with Obamacare. They got their toe in. It'll probably wipe out our country. And so Yeah, they get you let them get their toe. We let them get their toe in the door on the internet. Well, there probably won't be any more Bard's Logic kind of discussion. There probably won't be any more Dugan Kings on Facebook because they'll be able to just, yank you off.
Yeah, well, that's what we got to keep.
I mean, controlling the internet just like they control the television medium. It all comes in through this one cable, and it's just a monopoly. And the programming, they hire the best psychiatrists to figure out how to affect, how to demoralize our young people, our elderly, all these different programmings. It's what's wrong with America. We've got too many TV heads.
Too many talking heads, too many unreality reality shows. And speaking
exactly.
of Obama and Obamacare, I will do a little plug for next week's show here real quick. I have two authors coming on. That's Matt Margolis and Mark Noonan. They recently published a book out there, and that is called 150 Reasons Why Obama is the Worst President Ever. So folks come on to the show in history, not the worst president ever, but I was just kind of paraphrasing the title of the book. But that is next Wednesday at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and we'll be talking about the book and the ways that President Obama is the worst president ever in history. And I would say that's pretty accurate, at least in modern history. So it's going to be an interesting show.
Yeah, I didn't think anyone could ever top George Bush, and I didn't think anyone could top Bill Clinton. But, Obama's the top now. It just bad leadership. I think he's really just a puppet. I believe the two-party deal, we're just electing puppets. And anytime Obama discusses economics, you could tell he's like a deer in the headlights. He doesn't know what he's talking about. So he has to have all the Wall Street advisors around him to mm-hmm. tell him what to do when it comes to economic policy. We don't need followers. We need real leaders. They'll find somebody with a nice face and a nice smile, and he can deliver a speech, and he's a good liar.
Right, so proper.
That's who gets into office.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it doesn't help when the opposition party, as they call it, the Republican Party, puts up, a candidate such as Mitt Romney to go up against them. I mean, I contend that Mitt Romney was probably the very worst of all the primary candidates to go up against Obama because, frankly, he was Obama light. And you certainly can't defeat Obama with Obama light.
Well, what was funny about their debate, I was watching the debate, and it was so petty, I was thinking, yeah, I guess it's kind of hard for two guys who agree on everything to have a debate.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that brings me to a parody that I like to play. It's kind of funny. It only lasts about a minute long. I kept this from when I was doing shows on the electric here, election. And so let's see if I can find this here. It's funny. As I said, it's only here it is. It's only a minute long, and you may find this funny as well. And this is from the Romney and Obama debate.
Mr. President, just how different are you from Governor Romney?
Now, let me be clear. I agreed with Governor Romney on many things. For instance, abortion. He was pro-choice most of his adult life. So was I. But he changed his position when he became presidential candidate.
Hold on.
Now, let's take guns. Now, Governor Romney and I, we were in complete agreement on gun control. Now, that is, until he changed his mind.
But I...
And on health care, well, I was so inspired by Romneycare that I nationalized it and called it Obamacare.
Whoa.
But now presidential candidate Romney is against the individual mandate and universal health care. Now, I agreed with Governor Romney on many things, but this presidential candidate Romney, I don't even know the guy. Then again, he doesn't seem to know himself.
Oh, come on.
Governor Romney? Getting our future is responsible for the content of this message.
I love that little blurb there.
it almost sounds like a real conversation with Obama. But, I noticed in the debates, there wasn't much for him to argue about, so they had to focus on little petty issues. But in the free and equal debates put on by Christina Tobin,
right,
where she invited the third-party candidates like Gary Johnson and Jill Stein and the others, Virgil Good.
Rocky Anderson.
That was very interesting because now all of a sudden you hear ideas. It was almost like sitting in on a brain trust, and I was hearing some wonderful ideas that you'll never hear in on the national stage. And so this free and equal thing, it reached 20 million people. It made Christina Tobin one of the rising stars of the Liberty Movement. It was emceed by Larry King. And so now we're taking this and we're moving it to the next level. And, you know, people really just are really behind this free and equal election idea. And so I'm excited to be a part of it. I think it's new. It's unifying people. And I believe without unification, you can't have liberty. You have to have unification if you want liberty because, you know, tyrants, the greatest fear is that the people will unite, you know. And so
mm-hmm.
I think that's what it's about. If we're going to have liberty, we got to, you know, we got to join hands with people that we don't agree with on all these little thousands of little splintered up petty issues that are mostly media created. We're splintered up on these little petty issues, and then the big issues like liberty, peace, and justice for all are lost. We don't have liberty. We don't have peace. We don't have justice in America. And so we're not going to get those until everybody unites and everybody can agree. Who can agree on liberty, peace, and justice for all? Those are the big issues. That's what we need to focus on. The more issues you try to focus on, the more you're going to splinter people up. So liberty, peace, and justice, free and equal elections, alternative currencies, militias, county militias organized by the sheriffs and the constables. These are little, what I call bypass strategies. You don't have to depend on Congress to act. They're not going to bite the hand that feeds them. You get people on the grassroots level to act, and you create these kind of bypass organizations.
You know, actually, I was having a conversation today with somebody from work, and they were talking about, you know, how split the country is. And one of the things you just don't seem to see as much, at least not even since I was a kid, is the type of unity as just being Americans. You know, I mean, it used to be where, you know, there was just a sense of unity just for the very fact of being an American, being a citizen of the country. And it's just something that I just don't feel now the way, I mean, I'm not saying I don't personally feel it, but I'm saying is I don't feel that sense of unity, that there is that sense of unity right now in the country. I feel like this country is more divided than it has ever been before in its history. Now, you know, whether it's, you know, it's the politics that's doing it, or the big corporate, I think it's more, you know, so, you know, the big corporations through politics doing it. But I just don't feel that, you know, that kind of unity in this country anymore. I mean, as I said, and not a personal thing for me, but I'm just saying outside with, you know, just the people, you know, in general, we're just so divided against,
yeah,
and as you mentioned,
right,
there's so many different, on so many different levels and topics.
You're exactly right, Robert. We're divided. We're probably more divided than we've ever been, and that's why another reason I'm going with free and equal. It's about unification. We need unity more than ever. This division works in favor of Wall Street. They want to keep us divided. They want to keep us blaming each other. They want to split the nation in half. Democrats blaming Republicans for all of our problems. When the true culprits are the guys hiding behind the curtain. You know, we're ignoring that man behind the curtain who's pulling all the strings, and that's the money power. That's the Federal Reserve. That's Wall Street. That's the bankers. They control the corporations. They create corporations out of thin air. Study the activities of J.P. Morgan after the Federal Reserve was created. For example, there's articles where it shows where he brought the 25 largest newspapers in the country together. To create the very beginnings of the mainstream media, He organized General Motors by merging all the little bitty independent small auto companies like Chevrolet and Buick and Oldsmobile. All these were little private companies that went down in a recession, in a money panic, and then so that the J.P. Morgan could come in and buy them up cheap and merge them into this gigantic General Motors Corporation. That's what dominates our life today. The military industrial corporation. These are gigantic Wall Street corporations that you have to feed them, and there's only one way to feed these corporations. You have to have wars. And so that might be the driving force that makes America is now the Roman Empire. We're out conquering the world. We're imposing democracy at the point of a bayonet on the rest of the world. You know, that's not how America is supposed to be, the light, the beacon of light, but now we're the Roman Empire. And we're going, you know, if we continue that's what bankrupted and destroyed the Roman Empire. We're going down that same road. We're electing Democrats and Republicans. They're taking turns destroying our country. Why? Because they haven't learned the lessons of history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so
they do not learn from history, or did they repeat it?
Yeah. And we're electing too many politicians like Nancy Pelosi that probably never cracked a history book.
She probably made wisecracks about it, but...
Yeah, I don't know if people have seen the little clip where she tells people we have to pass Obamacare so that we can read it.
Yeah, we have to pass it to see what's in it.
This is the kind of leadership that we've got. And the thing is, with the two-party system, with the Democrats and Republicans, I basically look at them as cult followers. Only cult followers can all believe in the same thing. No one really believes exactly in the same thing, and that's why, people that belong, they allow their belief system to come fixed in stone. So I look at the Democrats and the Republicans as cult followers, and that means they're not really leaders. You have followers masquerading as leaders, getting elected to office, and they're just following their platforms. What we need is critical thinkers. People with ideas, people with positive solutions, and we're not going to get those until we have honest elections.
Right, and the people who are in there aren't doing that now. And also, excuse me. And if we keep on doing what is, I'll reiterate, you always do what you've always done, and you're always going to get what you've already got.
Right.
And I think that's a good point. Now, the people who vote down party line, whether it's Democrat or Republicans, I think that they believe that that's their only viable option. I mean, when we were covering the elections, a lot of folks, and I unfortunately lost a lot of friends because of it, is because, I didn't toe the party line after the election, after what the Republicans did at the convention. Not all Republicans, but I'm talking about, the leadership did at the convention. And, I couldn't, toe the party line because for me it's principle over party. And so, I'm trying to phrase this in a way where the folks who stayed, with the party, as I believe, I think in their defense is that they believe that that's the only option. That's the only viable option. Obviously, I believe they're aware that there are other options, but I think what they need to see is that those options are viable. Those options can actually succeed, and they're afraid that, and this is probably done by design by the two-party system, is that they're afraid that if they don't stick with, let's say, the Republican Party, for instance, then the Democrat Party, which is seen as the greater of the two evils, will take over and things will just get even worse. And that's sometimes I think that's set up by both parties. To do that, because the Democrats think the same way with the Republicans. Let's do the other side, is the Democrats get their constituents to be so afraid of the Republicans and thinking, oh my gosh, the Republicans are going to ruin everything or what have you, that they're so afraid to, hey, if you join like a Green Party or, I really don't know any other besides a Green Party that's left-leaning, I guess.
Yeah.
What's the party that's Rocky Anderson was a part of. I apologize, I can't remember which one he was, but I think that was more or less.
I believe that might have been called the Independent Party.
Maybe it's an independent or something else.
Justice Party, I believe.
The Justice Party, right, which was left-leaning. So, you know, for the, you know, they make the grassroots afraid to go the routes because they think, well, if you vote for these guys, you're actually voting for the enemy. I mean, I'm sure you've heard that logic before.
And, yeah, I've been thinking about all those things too, Robert, and so that's what compelled me. And, you know, I like to come up with innovative ideas. Like the fair tax or tax free or the model charter of the city state, these kind of ideas. One of the ideas I published today on my Facebook page is that the independent nomination plan, which I was thinking, okay, we have this huge voting block of independent voters who they have to swing. They either got to swing to the left to the Democrats, or they're going to swing to the right. You know, they really can't stomach party, but that's usually the only two choices that they think they have. And so you get these Wall Street Democrats and Wall Street Republicans and marching to the same Wall Street beat, and so that's who's in control of our destiny. But in this plan, what it does, it creates, on the county level, it creates what I call a free association that's nonpartisan, nonprofit, that sponsors and certifies an independent nominating process. In other words, you can allow independents of all various persuasions who belong to no party to run for office by entering the debating contest. Now, this costs them no money. There's no fee. There's no signatures or petitions they have to submit. If you want to run for office, you just all you have to be is a registered voter, and then we put you in these debating tournaments, and we allow the debating tournaments to figure out, you know, who are the most intelligent critical thinkers with positive solutions. This is what we need in government, you know, honest, intelligent, critical thinkers, not just somebody that's a follower in a party cult. You know, that's not a leader. That's a follower masquerading as a leader. We need true leaders. And they shouldn't, you know, if we can keep the partisan politics out of it, if we can keep the big money out of it, if we can keep the big media out of it, then you will have honest elections. And so that's what this plan does. It creates these debates. You allow the local voters to pick the winners of the debate. And then the assembly that creates these debates, once you have the winners, no matter, each person's running not with a label on their forehead, that, you know, it's each person's running on their own platform, their own personal political compass, presenting their own ideas. This is what we need, a free marketplace of ideas. And we let people enter it, and we have this contest where it narrows down to the winners. And then the organization gets behind those winners and works to raise funds and or raise petitions to put them on the ballot or otherwise to create high-profile write-in campaigns. And so I think that what that does, by eliminating the partisanship, by eliminating the big money, by eliminating the need for big media, how do you do that? You put these debates on a web page for the citizens of the county, for all of them to see it. So with a method like that, that can be done on the grassroots level, a free association created in every county. With little subcommittees that count the vote and register the vote and make sure you have honest, accurate elections. It's all laid out on my Facebook page. If you want to go there, Dugan King on Facebook. It's called the Independent Nomination Plan.
Well, and definitely, folks, check that out. We do only have a few minutes left here of the show, so I'm going to go ahead and close things out for this evening. Thank you very much, Dugan, for coming on, and we'll definitely would like to hear from you on subsequent shows when we have other folks coming on to talk about the Free and Equals United We Stand Festival in Arkansas, Little Rock, Arkansas, on June 22nd. Definitely, folks, check it out. Look it up on the website. See about go on there. It's going to be a great time. We're going to have some good folks there some good music, and a very good message that's definitely grassroots. We, the people, and we really need to get active. It's important to get active now. So, of course, I do have someone who is on the line listening in, as a couple other folks as well. If you'd like to chime in, we're going to close things out, but we can go to extended time if people would like to chime in as well. And that is 347-945-7428 for those who'd like to call in also on subsequent shows to either listen in or to chime in here. I do see some last-minute folks have come in. So if you'd like to say some parting words before we close out the show, just push 1 on your number dial, and then we'll have you come in. So I've got someone here on the chat. It says, good night all. Such wonderful and educated. Thank you, Harriet, again, for your contributions. Night all, wonderful and educational. Keep up with the good work. She says, Robert, Wednesdays are a good time for me. Well, that's great, Harriet. I really appreciate you coming to the show. And, of course, just check out the Arbucks on Facebook. That's the T-H-E, and then dash A-R-B-U-C-K, and then you can check it out that way in the search engine to look that up about the alternate currencies for that. So I see here that people are just going to listen in, so I will proceed to open up the mic for a few minutes here to Mr. Dugan to say any last parting words tonight before we end the show.
Well, Robert, thank you for inviting me to your show. It was very interesting. I hope we were able to educate a few people. And, of course, I always learn things in things like this, and I'm glad to be there. I'll be happy to come back anytime you invite me. The United, if you want to find out a little bit more about the United We Stand Festival, just go to UnitedWeStandFest.com. And it tells who's showing up. It'll tell you how to get tickets. There's all kinds of information there. UnitedWeStandFest.com.
Great. And thank you, everyone, for coming into the show tonight live, or whether you listen to this show archived, and definitely check out the Bard's Logic Political Talk website by going to www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com, where you can also find the links to the United We Stand Festival and also to freeandequal.org. And so I will end tonight as I do every night, and that is a song by Aubrey Ashburn, and you can hear more of her music at www.aubreyashburn.com. And thanks again, Dugan, for coming in. And, of course, you will be welcome back again. So take care, everyone. Good night, and see you again.
Good night, Robert. Thank you.
Good night.